Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
And good Wednesday morning to you. I'm Andy Griffin. Thanks for tuning in to the program today. Stockton Myers hanging out with me, too. What's up, Stockton?
Hello.
He's kind of actually less than half my age. He's 28 now.
Yes.
I'm 58. Next year, you'll be 29. I'll be 59.
That is how
counting works. Next year, you'll be 30.
Yes.
And I'll be 60. You'll be exactly half my age.
Oh.
And then from then on, for the rest of forever, you'll be more than half my age.
Gotcha. I was wondering where you're going with that, because I was just like, yes, Andy, this is how counting works.
I had the opportunity last night to watch Reagan. I went to the movie Reagan. You haven't seen it yet, right?
No, I haven't.
Interesting show. So, Ronald Reagan was the first American president to have been divorced.
Right.
But he was married to Nancy Reagan for, I think they ended up being married 50 years or something like that. And honestly, and I don't know the truth of this, but they portray in the movie that his first wife was not happy that he was Screen Actors Guild vice president and president before he got into politics and everything. She was not happy that he was pursuing the political side of his life and not the acting side of his life. And they also lost a child, which created some friction in the marriage too. And so that marriage ended. But,
did the marriage end before? I'm not as well versed as you are in the Reagan era. So, did they divorce during his presidency or?
No, way before he was even governor of California.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he was a pretty young man when they got divorced. But, Nancy really was, you know, my wife said something very astute. She said, something about, you know, Nancy, I guess Nancy was his wife the whole time he was governor and president. And then she said, actually, he probably never would have been governor or president if Nancy wasn't his wife. And she's absolutely right. Nancy pushed him. Nancy helped him to realize his dreams. Mm. And so we owe Nancy Reagan a lot. By the way, Nancy, if you go to the Reagan Presidential Library, Stockton, they have life-size bronze statues of the two of them. And Ron's about 6 feet tall, probably weighs 180. He's not a small man, but he's not a large man either. But Nancy is so tiny. She is, I mean, they show like her dress size was zero or something.
Oh, wow.
And she had little stick figure legs and arms. I mean, she was just so skinny. And my wife is not a big woman, but next to this bronze statue of the life-size Nancy Reagan, my wife looked like a big girl.
Yeah.
It was kind of funny. But the movie last night. So, first of all, there were no children in the audience in the movie. And I guess there wouldn't be, right? I mean, what kid wants to go see a biopic on a president, right?
Yeah, it's not exactly. Although I did, you say that, for some reason when I was like 12, I think I was,
mm-hmm.
or 2008. Yeah, so I was 12. I wanted to go to, I wanted to go see The King's Speech.
The King's Speech.
Yeah, okay. Do you know what that is?
I remember hearing about it, but it was about Martin Luther King? Or?
No. It was about...
Which king are we talking
about? It was about a king of England.
Oh, okay.
It was about a king of England who had a speech impediment.
Oh.
And he, like, worked with a speech coach to... It was, like, right before World War II happened or something like that. But for some reason, as a kid, I wanted to go see this biopic. So, you never know. Sometimes there's a history
buff of a kid. A weird
little
nerdy kid.
Yeah, like myself.
So, all right, a couple of things about the movie last night. Number one, Dennis Quaid, fantastic portraying Ron Reagan. As someone who lived through the Reagan presidencies and as a big Reagan fan, I was a little wary going in. I was like, I don't think he's, I mean, come on, how can you do? He actually did a real, he captured the mannerism. He doesn't look exactly like Reagan, but he captured the mannerisms, the habits, the speech. He spot on impersonation. Of Ronald Reagan, and the crooked smile and the one thing that Reagan had, that Donald Trump does not have is, this incredible amount of charisma. you could hate Ronald Reagan, and if you spent 5 minutes in a room with him, you'd love the guy. Even if you might still disagree with his politics, but you'd be like, he's a great guy, you know? Mm-hmm. And Dennis Quaid did a good job of capturing that part of Ron Reagan. I came out of the movie, and I'm not going to say spoiler alerts. We all know about Ron Reagan. He did get Alzheimer's late in his life and eventually took his life. But I came out of that movie with a clarity of mind about this current presidential race that we're in. Donald Trump, like Reagan, now Donald Trump is not Ronald Reagan, and he has a lot of flaws that Ronald Reagan did not have, and I'm sure Reagan had some flaws that Trump doesn't too, does not, but like Ronald Reagan, Donald Trump wants America to be the best country in the world, wants America to win, wants America to be great. I mean, it's a cliche, MAGA, right? Make America great again. He really believes that. He wants that. So much so that he doesn't care about a salary. He actually never took a salary as president. He doesn't want one now. And he's willing to. This is the part that blows me away. We just had an assassination attempt a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. He was shot at and hit at a rally in Pennsylvania a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And yet he hasn't quit. I don't know how many of us would say, you know what, people are trying to kill me. It ain't worth it. I'm out. Right? Well,
I think he said in a recent press conference about how he was like bullfighting, you know, dangerous profession, other dangerous professions, whatever. Yeah. And then he's like, no, this
might be the one.
Yeah, this might be the
most
one.
Dangerous. Yeah. So anyway, the clarity I got was Donald Trump wants America to be great, to be the best that it can be, just like Ronald Reagan. Kamala Harris, Joe Biden, they want power. They want to be famous. They want money. They want all these things that they want are not America being great. They're I want to be great. And Ronald Reagan was never about that. He never wanted to be the most famous man in history or the most famous man in America. He wanted America to be great. Hmm. Now, of course, there were some different circumstances then than there are now. For instance, the Soviet Union, the big bad communism, they were taking over countries and you know, threatening nuclear war. And for the most part, that's not as big a deal now, although you got Iran, I guess, developing nuclear weapons and things like that. So it is something to be worried about. But I came out of there thinking, you know what? It's so easy. If people will just sit down and think about it. Do you want America to be great? Or do you want Kamala to be great? That's your choice. If Donald Trump wins, I think America will get back to where we were 4 years ago or go back to the 80s as on track to becoming the greatest country in the world. If you don't want that, if that's not a big deal to you, well, then you can vote for Kamala, I guess. Like Ron said it, Ronald Reagan said in the movie last night, it's actually a simple choice. If you want this, it's one thing. If you want the other, it's another thing. One of the great lines in the movie, by the way, he's having a debate with Walter Mondale. This is the 84 election. And one of the reporters asks, you're an old guy. Are you sure you're up to the task of being president, considering your advanced age? And Ronald Reagan answered perfectly. He said something to the effect of, I refuse to make age an issue in this election. I refuse to make the idea that my opponent is young and inexperienced an issue in this election. Made everybody laugh, including Walter Mondale. And at that point, well, it was a done deal. He ended up winning 49 out of 50 states.
Oh, wow.
In 1984. Trivia question? What was the only state he didn't win?
Alaska?
No. Minnesota.
Minnesota.
Where the current running mate of Kamala Harris is the governor. Yeah. So,
gotcha.
Anyway, Reagan movie. Only got 6.5 stars on IMDb, Internet Movie Database. I would give it an 8.2. It wasn't perfect, but it was good.
Yeah.
It was good. And I hope there are people, young people, it was mostly older people in the movie theater last night. I hope some of the young people can go see that and kind of understand a little bit about what Ronald Reagan was all about.
Well, like I said, my sister and her husband saw it just recently.
And they are young.
Yeah, my sister is, oh my gosh, hang on, add six. 34.
Okay. I did a little math there.
Yeah.
You were getting on me about math a minute ago.
Well,
come on.
All my siblings, so every one of us is 3 years apart. So if it's the brother above me, add three. If it's my sister, add six. If it's the brother who passed away, it's add nine. If it's the oldest brother, 12.
All right, let's change topics a little bit. By the way, go see Reagan. If you get a chance out there, folks listening, and haven't seen it, I say go see it. Go see it. I think it's well worth your
while.
And
I have family members who also say it's worthwhile. So.
All right.
And they are very critical about these type of things. So.
And by the way, on Tuesdays, I'm not sure of the Sunset Theater, but at Pineview Theater Tuesdays.
$5 movie night.
Half price.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so. I think it's up to six now, but still, it's half price.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's change topics now for a minute. I'm going to play something for you. For some of you, will go, oh, I remember, I was young.
But I'm going to be like, what the heck is this? Is that
No. You know, this is actually aimed at your generation.
Oh.
You're going to be, oh, I remember that when I was young. Some of you are going to be like, oh, yeah, my kids, and that's me. My kids used to be involved with this. And then some of you a little bit older are going to say, what the heck is that? But I'm playing it for a purpose, so I want you to listen.
We gotta find a paw print. That's the first clue. We put it in a notebook, and now what do we do? Clues. We gotta find another paw print.
That's the first clue.
We put it in a notebook. Now what do we do?
Clues.
Find another paw print. That's the third clue. Put it in a notebook, and well, you know what to do.
Oh.
Clues. Well, we sit down in a thinking chair and think.
Yeah. Now the concept behind Blue's Clues, and my kids loved Blue's Clues.
You're gonna make me tear up.
The concept behind Blue's Clues, for those that maybe didn't watch it, never heard of it, or maybe you're too old for it, basically, this dude lives in an apartment with his animated dog, and...
Well, it's a house. It's like a little house with, like, a backyard and stuff.
And they have clues, and they try to figure out whatever mystery there is of the day, and it's not murder mysteries or anything like
no,
that.
No, it's
these
basically
cute
like...
little.
Like this little dog is like
yeah, Blue.
I want to drink lemonade today, but I can't convey this to my owner. So therefore, I'm going to put my
leave some paw prints
yeah. on certain items. So I'm going to place my paw print on a lemon, some sugar, and a glass, and then.
Yeah. So one of the concepts of this show is you can do it's a line in one of the song, the theme song. You can do anything.
You want to do
that. You want to do.
Yeah,
you can do anything that you want to do. And I have, I actually have an issue, and I used to tell my kids about it when they were watching. And, you know, they're 6 years old, 4 years old, whatever. They're like, "Shut up, Dad. We don't care." But I used to explain to them, you can do almost anything that you want to do, but there are certain realistic limitations to who you are. For instance, I'm going to give you an example, Stockton,
okay.
and then you can talk about yours. When I was a kid, I grew up about 50 miles from Austin. I wanted to be quarterback of the University of Texas Longhorns. That was at the age of 8, 9, 10. That was my life's goal. I was going to be the quarterback for the Texas Longhorns. As I got a little bit older, I got bigger, and I realized, okay, quarterback's probably not going to happen, even though I can throw the ball well because of my body size. I'll probably have to be a lineman, but okay, I want to be a lineman at the University of Texas and maybe block for Earl Campbell or Ricky Williams or one of their great players. As I got older than that, I realized I was blessed with a curse of being not really that fast. I was slow. Well, a lineman at the Division I college level, you have to be big, but I don't think people even understand how actually quick these linemen have to be. You can't just be a big, slow dude. I was a big, slow dude, and it became realistic to me that I was not going to be playing for the University of Texas. The other thing is we moved to Utah, and so my dream shifted a little. I was like, okay, well, I'll play at BYU. And anyway, long story short, I never did make it as a lineman for the Longhorns. But beyond that, I was going to go then graduate from Texas and play for the Dallas Cowboys. That didn't happen either, obviously. So, you know, when I hear something like you can do anything that you want to do, I'm like, well, now hold on a second. I'm all for dreams, right? I'm all for achieving, you know, beyond watching Ronald Reagan. He wanted to make a difference in this world. And Nancy helped him realize he wanted to be president of the United States. He made a difference, but there are certain limitations. For instance, Stockton, you're an actor. You have been the lead in plays. You have been on stage in front of people. You have memorized oodles and oodles of lines in shows, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Does that translate well to, say, starring on your school's basketball team?
I would say a little bit, because there's certain okay, well, here's what I mean. There are certain – what if you're, like, memorizing a playbook or something like that?
Okay. And I did that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so one of the things that I learned – you said that I memorized oodles and oodles of lines. Mm-hmm. That doesn't just apply to scripts. That also applies to songs. It applies to to arithmetic. It applies to sonnets. It applies to just passages. In seminary, I – did scripture mastery, and I did it faster than anyone else in the class because of the training that I had gotten through acting. Yeah. So,
did you turn them into little songs so you could remember them better?
No, I did for learning the 12 apostles and the first presidency at the time, which I have completely forgotten at this point because it is very irrelevant, the one that I learned.
They're all gone now.
Yeah.
So, I guess the point I'm trying to make is, could you star in the NBA given your current body type?
No.
Probably not.
No, absolutely not.
Could I star in the NHL playing hockey? Well, I never really was an ice skater, so I don't know if I would have developed that skill if I'd have been any good. But chances are probably not. So when I hear you can do anything you want to do, I'm like, I'm not sure about that. For instance, so my wife... So my dad has taken up painting, and he's actually pretty good. He's found this hidden talent. He's 89 years old. He's found this hidden talent. He paints some pretty cool stuff. It's pretty awesome. My wife likes to paint, and she's not bad at it, right? She does a pretty good job. She desires, though, some professional training. She wants to take a class and get better at it. And she's like, hey, you know what would be fun, honey? And I'm like, uh-oh. She said, you know what would be fine is if me, you, and your dad take a painting class together.
Mm.
And my daughter chimed in and says, yeah, Dad, that would you would have so much fun. You probably have this hidden talent of painting, and you would be so good at it. And I'm like, yeah, here's the thing, you guys. I'm not against taking a class and trying to improve myself, but I got to tell you, as a person who knows me, I'm 58 years old. I've tried to paint. I've tried to draw. I am not an artist, and I never will be an artist. And so, and my daughter's like, oh, you just never really tried. You could, and by the way, my daughter is an artist. And she's like, well, you just never really tried. I'm like, that is actually not true at all. I am not good at drawing, at paint. I don't do that. I've tried and it's been terrible. So I can write. I am convinced right now, if I were to quit my job and devote full time to writing a book, I think I could write a pretty good book. I really do. There were a couple of times in my life I actually wrote parts of a book and never finished. But I feel like I could write. But if you asked me to then illustrate my own book, nobody would buy that.
Yeah.
That's not happening. So a famous man once said, his name is Clint Eastwood, said, man's got to know his limitations.
Hmm.
And I actually am a firm believer in that. I believe that there are certain things that we all, certain talents given to us by God. And there are certain things that we're good at. And there are certain things we don't have a talent for. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not bad. It just is. Hmm. So, thoughts?
Okay. I'm stepping up on my podium.
All right. Remember, I can turn your mic down at any time.
Of course,
a little crazy.
So, first things first, I was born the day Blue's Clues premiered.
Really? I did not know.
Yes, and I also auditioned to become the next Blue's Clues
host. You would make a good Steve. Yeah, you really would.
Well, I actually went to Hollywood and auditioned to become the new Blue's Clues host, but obviously that didn't turn out.
So, Joe went in after Steve. I don't know what his real name is.
No, so Joe went after Steve, and then Blue's Clues was recently rebooted.
Really?
Called Blue's Clues and You, and Joshua De La Cruz is his name, Josh, on the show, and he's a fantastic new host. So I have a lot of attachment to Blue's Clues. I would fall asleep to Blue's Clues every single night as a kid with the orange VHS tape in my little CRT TV. I have most of the old songs still memorized to this day because of how much it's stuck into my brain. But in regards to anything you want to do as an adult, of course, we're going to find the, we're going to nitpick the little things like, yeah, could you really do anything you want to do? Like, could you become an astronaut after, like, you've already graduated from school in journalism and you're 30? Could you realistically become an astronaut? Nah, you know what I mean? Yeah. So, or become an NBA star, all that stuff. However, I will say this. When you're a kid and you're a little seed waiting to be to blossom, you know, you don't really want to tell a kid.
Like, no, and that's not what I'm saying.
Well, of course, course. But here's the other thing I would say to that. You were talking about how you, like, you're trying new things at your age and you're, and you say, oh, I'm just not good at it and all that stuff. I think of my dad. And maybe this is just me bragging about my dad. I don't know. But my dad is 66 years old now. He just barely retired from being a surgeon. He also played football when he was in college and in high school and such. And the amount of things... The amount of things my dad has tried... because of that kind of mantra of you can do anything you want to do, it's changed when you're an adult. It's you can try anything. You know what I mean? You got to try if you want to know.
Anything you want to try.
And so, I mean, my dad is 66 years old. He's trying to learn how to play the banjo. He does try to learn how to.
That's not easy.
He also does try to dabble in drawing. He's made stuffed giant fingers for talks for in church. He was a stake president, and he, like, tries to learn new things, and he tries to adapt to his environment. So, I don't know. I think that living by the mantra, you can do anything you want to do, is a good mantra to live by. But also, it's more like, you got to try if you want to know if you can do it. You got to try first.
I agree. Try, but be realistic, I
yeah,
guess.
Yeah, no, I agree be about realistic. That.
And there's just going to be certain things you're just not very
so overall, about. I agree. But as a kid... you probably want to be told you can do anything.
Yeah. All right. Weather break. Dave Roemer coming in after this timeout.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Good morning to you, 9:34 on KDXU. Tomorrow, Nanette Billings, Hurricane City Mayor, will be on the program to talk a little bit about their... she's really psyched about their Veterans Memorial that they're putting together there in Hurricane. So many people have stepped up and donated time, effort, money to put that thing together. So I'm pretty excited about that. We'll talk about that in depth tomorrow. Right now, I've got Dave Roemer with me from Modern Wars, our firearms expert. Hi, Dave.
How's it going?
Thanks for coming on today, man.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
We unbelievably had a second assassination attempt on President Trump. This one, they got it before he at least got a shot off on the president. But here's a guy hiding in the bushes with a scoped rifle waiting for the president, in a golf course, waiting for the president to come by so he could theoretically, I mean, he didn't get a shot off, so we don't know for sure, but why else would you be sitting in the bushes with a rifle with the scope on it?
Yeah, it kind of limits the possibilities there a little bit.
Yeah, he was supposedly there for 12 hours, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, first of all, modern weaponry and the idea. How close did the president need to be for him to have a realistic shot of actually killing him?
Yeah, I mean, it obviously goes down to some specifics there on, you know, what kind of weapon you're using, how well you're trained, if you know how to use it, right? That's a big thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's from the reports that I've heard, it was an AK-style rifle. Those are realistically kind of range limited, about 300 yards. I mean, obviously, if you have good skill, you know what you're doing, you can push past your theoretical ranges. But, I mean, 300's kind of...
300. So
yeah,
he was
the caliber itself limits you a little bit on that. If more like a 5.56 or an AR-style rifle, you're more 400 or 500 yards.
He was about 500 yards from the president when he was discovered.
That's everything I've read, yes. Sounds like 400 to 500 yards away.
And that's the very edge of any range at that point.
Yeah, for something like that, you can get into bigger calibers and stuff, and yeah, that drastically increases. But
most
people don't do that.
I watched the video. This guy's obviously an expert sniper, and... Even he at a mile, so which is 1,600 yards approximately, he could hit 2 or 3 out of 10 from a mile away. It was a little target about the size of a soup can or whatever. And he says I'm one of the best snipers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And at a mile, for me to be able to hit 3 out of 10 is pretty good. I'm proud of that. So. Really, you have a guy who, and we don't know the training of this guy that was on the golf course, but realistically, President would have had to been on basically on the same hole, the same area that guy was on if he was gonna do it.
Yeah, making some assumptions, of course. Yeah, I mean, I would assume he's got to be pretty darn close, especially considering supposedly what rifle he's using. I would expect. I mean, the last shooter should have been able to take him. That was a chip shot,
a lot closer.
Sort of missed, so which is good, but
turning the head at the last second.
For that round, that was actually pretty close. So
let's talk a little bit about the Secret Service now. In this instance, that happened earlier this week. I guess it was last weekend, last Sunday. But the Secret Service, they discovered him.
Mm-hmm.
They engaged him and did not hit him. By the way, I don't know how close they were. I don't know what kind of weapons they were using. They did not hit him. He was able to. Get away, get in his car, drive away. It took like 45 minutes before they were able to find him. And the reason they were able to find him is a citizen took a picture of the car as the guy was getting in it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were able to get the license plate there. But let's talk about engaging a suspect like that. Like I said, we don't know a lot of specifics. And so I don't expect you to say, hey, they were 10 yards away. Why didn't they hit him? But in your mind, should that guy have been able to get away?
I mean, again, there's a lot of variables there we don't know the answer to. I mean, most of the time, Secret Service is going to have a handgun on them. If they're going a little more overt, they might have a long gun. But
not likely, though, probably, huh?
Right. So, I mean, from the details I've been able to find, he was in the bushes. They spotted a rifle barrel at 400 to 500 yards away from Trump. How far they were, doesn't say. Yeah. But it probably wasn't that far unless they were looking through binoculars or something. That already, right? That's already an improvement over the last time. Right?
Yeah,
you were able to spot a rifle barrel in the bushes. That's already higher attention to detail than what we saw last time. And they engaged him without him shooting, so that's already improvement as well. So, to me, that's a very different group of people and a very different skill set than the last time we saw, which is that's good. But I mean, if you're talking about handgun, someone's in the bushes, like you saw a barrel, you got an idea where you can shoot. There might be thick limbs that are deflecting rounds. There's a lot of factors there.
Yeah.
And you also have to remember they have to make sure they aren't putting rounds astray that are going off into the neighborhood or
one
else.
One of the rules, right?
Right. You've got to make sure if they don't hit your target that they're stopping as well, right? So you do need to be careful with that. Primary goal is to make sure he can't get a shot off. That's primary. Secondary is to actually stop your person or contain them, depending on what that means. Ideally, you don't kill them because then you can ask them questions and find out some info, right? See if they're up to it themselves, see if something else is going on.
Who's paying you?
Right? Yeah. So that's useful information to be able to grab if you can, which obviously if you kill them, you can't do that. But sometimes you don't have a choice, right? So there's a little too many details there that are missing to know for sure if that should have been easy one to keep them from getting away. But... I could realistically see where that could happen. Yeah.
Let me ask you your opinion. And we had Jason Chaffetz on earlier this year. He's a former congressman, and he had talked about that the Secret Service has all the money that it needs to do its job. Mm-hmm. They have just elected whoever's in charge, maybe Joe Biden, I don't know, have elected not to give President Trump the full complement of Secret Service security. Now, I said, well, why can't he then? I mean, he's got money. Why can't he just hire his own security? He said, well, here's the problem. If you try to get private security in there and there's also Secret Service, you got a real coordination problem.
Real coordination problem. Yes.
So what goes into protecting someone, Dave, if you look at, you know, something like that? I mean, I guess everybody's got to be on the same page, huh?
You do, and that's more than just being able to talk and say, hey, I'm over here, right? I mean, yeah. there's a whole tactics and mindset issue that if you're coming from different fields, like the criteria are different for engagement, they're also different sometimes on what your actual task is, right? So sometimes you're private security, sometimes overseas, right? It's we're getting them out of here no matter what. Others are... we're getting them out of here, as you know, but we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't proceed this far away. You know, there's all sorts of weird criteria that can go into various scenarios and various operational spaces. And someone like the Secret Service, even overseas, they get a lot more leeway because this is an actual country's security forces for their diplomats, right? That is looked at very, very differently than a private security firm is, mm-hmm. than a military is, any of that stuff. And a lot of, because of that, they can train to a different standard or a different criteria despite where they're operating versus someone else who that's going to drastically change everywhere you go. And so there's more than just communication, right? And if you're Secret Service, you have encrypted communications, all that kind of stuff. You're not just passing that out. That's not going to just go to a private security guy.
Right. So there's a private guy comes in. Here's one of our radios.
That is
or whatever.
A huge offset risk right there that you cannot do that. That is not optional at all. So you're going to have your own internal communications, and then you have to have a separate radio system that's external that goes to your security team. You're coordinating both those radio systems, doing all this. There's a lot that would go into all of that.
Are these guys armed with, you know, a lot of police officers will use a Glock or mm-hmm. you know, your basic firearm, sidearm. Are these guys, the Secret Service guys, armed with more firepower? Are they, do you think that they're going to have something bigger and badder?
They certainly can. It's not just a blanket statement. Pretty much without fail, they'll all have a handgun on them. Sometimes they will have what we like to call PDWs or personal defense weapons, mm-hmm. And they're designed to be super compact, often using a pistol caliber or kind of an intermediate lower power rifle cartridge or something. They can go really, really small. You have seen...
So my Glock is not what you would call a PDW?
No, that would just be a handgun. So this would be, you could see something like a MP5. A lot of people know those from movies and stuff. It still shoots a 9mm, but it has a stock. You could do it with just a sling, but you can do it as a stock. It goes super small, gives you the ability to mount optics and lights and be more accurate at more distance. But you can still conceal it under, say, like a trench coat or something like that, because it is nice and compact. The FNP-90 was actually developed for the Secret Service for a contract request.
FNP-90, who makes that one?
So FN Herstal makes that one. Okay. And it shoots this weird, it looks like a rifle round, but it's about the actual length of a 9mm. It's kind of goofy looking. But it's super, super small. It's a bullpup design, so the trigger's actually in front of where the barrel and the action is, which makes it even more compact while keeping a longer barrel. But that is something you could actually keep under like a suit jacket or a trench coat under your arm, and then you can pull out on a sling, and it gives you a couple hundred yards of actual ability to engage with some decent ballistics still. But there's some various options. If you're going more overt, I mean, they might just carry 16-inch ARs or something like that. But
so what would, I'm curious, what you're in the firearm business. I mean, that's what you do, and obviously a lot of your life has been, you know, surrounded and being trained and being good at that. What, when you hear something like this happen, first of all, of course, the shot in Pennsylvania that hit the former president in the ear and mm-hmm. was, what, an inch, maybe 2 inches away from ending his life, and then this next thing happened, what immediately pops into your head when you hear about these types of things?
I mean, the first thing is, well, what are the specifics, right? Because there's, like we've talked about, I mean, there's so many variables on a lot of these things that it's hard to make too much of a decision without knowing some specifics. If that had been a guy, like Pennsylvania, for instance, if that had been a guy, like, in the stands, pulled a gun out and started shooting at him, that's very different than being off the perimeter. Mm-hmm. However, he's within 150 yards of clear line of sight on an elevated position. That's kind of an obvious, like, hey,
and people saw him climbing up there with the gun,
not just looking here, but actually up here to prevent anything like that. But But yeah, I mean, you got to look at the actual facts and factors on all of that, because there are variances. In the instance of this case, this is one of the few spots on the course apparently that you actually have line of sight of the course from the tree line, which is accessible from the outside. Most of the course is not that way. That part is, and so then also from looking into this, that it sounds like they're pushing people multiple holes in front and behind of him when he's playing, so that they can be covering those areas before he gets there.
Yeah.
To me, that actually is a pretty logical way to do it, and is a great example of why this guy wasn't able to even get a shot off. Yeah. Because they're pushing people ahead, they know areas that they need to be looking at because of potential risks. Hey, this is the one spot somebody could actually sneak in. Let's look over there. Hey, there's a barrel. Awesome.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that helps tailor in. I mean, a barrel sticking out in the middle of bushes could easily look like a little bush limb or a tree limb.
Yeah, it looks right? like a stick, kind
but
of.
But that's where you've got to be trained. We call it combat hunter. You're looking for things that are out of the ordinary, out of the baseline. But you got to be trained to be looking for anything that's off. And it's hard to do that in an infinite environment. So if you can narrow that down into certain areas, that is going to drastically increase your ability to notice those little things.
Hmm. So you go into, when you hear about these things, you actually immediately go into tactical mode and analytic mode. And
personally, yeah.
Yeah.
And the other part, too, is you're going to hear all sorts of weird stuff. You know, it's the news, it's people that don't know guns, it's all this other thing, all these other things, right? So it's, you know, it's, to me, if I hear someone on the news go, oh, someone shot at somebody, I'm like, okay, so did they fire a round off in celebration at the bar mitzvah four miles away, and then it dropped in this area because that's the trajectory, or did they actually shoot at them, right?
Yeah.
From these people's perspective, that could be either one, right? So let's figure out what's going on first.
All right, we'll talk more about that. Got to get a commercial break in. Talking with Dave Romer, our firearms expert, after this timeout.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back to the Andy Griffin Show, 951 on KDXU. Dave Romer is with me. I have some firearms questions for Dave, and we actually talked about it a lot during the break, but we're going to talk about it now that the microphones are on. The other day, we had a news story come across the wire here. A lady was arrested, and so there was a road rage type incident, and a guy was banging on her window and yelling at her, cussing at her, whatever they do, you know, road rage, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. and hopefully none of us resort to that kind of garbage, but banging on her window and kind of, you know, calling her names, and so she pulls a gun out that was, I don't know, holstered in her car or whatever. She pulls a gun out, doesn't point it at him, but holds it up in the air like, you might want to back off or something might happen.
Mm-hmm.
The guy ran off. You know, saw a gun, ran off, called the cops. The cops came and arrested the woman. Your thoughts?
Yes. And so, like we were talking about, there's a lot that goes into authorization for deadly force. And there is a criminal code for brandishing a firearm.
Which so you is can't what
just,
she was charged
You can't
with.
Just pull a firearm out and show it to people. That's considered bad for society, let's put it that way, which the intent behind that is actually pretty good, but it can start getting weird in these kinds of situations. The problem is you're not authorized for deadly force unless you or a reasonable, prudent person feel that it is reasonably likely that someone's about to cause you serious bodily harm or death.
Okay. So this is a weird situation.
But that's
here.
In your mind, right?
Yeah.
So how that's not a black and white definitive, hey, this line here, check that box. Okay, it is authorized. I can now pull my gun even if I don't use it. That's not how that works, right? If I don't have a weapon in my hand and I go and start attacking or running towards and banging on the window of some 80-year-old woman, right? She's probably going to feel pretty threatened for her life and serious bodily harm.
Yeah.
If someone that is my build and my size comes without a weapon, starts banging on my window, I'm going to be like, this guy's a freaking jerk, but, you know, things get rough. Yeah, I might lose, but it's going to be whatever. If I have an NFL linebacker start coming at me, I'm going to be thinking, I'm at serious risk of serious bodily harm or death here. Like, this might be bad. Right. And so that is going to be very different for everyone. Right. And so that's not a black and white. We can just put this down and go, oh, yep, that's what happened. So, they can use their gun. So that has to go to a jury now.
Wow.
And the way this court stuff works with all of this can get super screwy and really weird. 'Cause it is a jury, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Various people have various viewpoints on all this. Even if they have zero experience with firearms, they're going to look at that and go, you know, you've heard cases of people actually using a gun in self-defense and have intentionally wounded people instead of killing them. And they have gone to jail for that. And basically what that's gone down to is the jury looked at that and went, oh, well, they weren't really scared for their life because they had the wherewithal to take a precision shot to wound this person as opposed to just panicking and dumping all their ammo.
I would have killed them.
Right, right. And it's like you've heard of people like even that are like ex-law enforcement. They've gone like two shots to the chest, one to the head. That's what they were trained to do their whole life. And then jury looks at that and go, well, they were just trying to kill them. Look at that. They had like 10 rounds in their gun. They weren't that scared. They just shot three times. Mm-hmm. You're like, well... Okay, so you're telling me I have to kill somebody if I pull a gun or else I'm going to jail? That seems pretty counterintuitive.
Very strange.
But yeah, it's weird how, because again, it is all black and white. It's down to perception, and you don't necessarily know who's going to be on the jury. If these people have ever shot a gun before or, I don't know, been through training before or anything like that, it becomes very, very quickly obvious that yeah, you know, how some of this stuff is going to play out and how various things can influence what you do. But I mean, it's a dangerous thing, not just in terms of life and death, but also in terms of your life post event, you know, right a bang, as we might say. It's just yeah, you don't always know what's going to happen, and that's where having a good legal team or getting like carry insurance or something like that can be extremely helpful. Because those guys, that's what they do, and they can put some resources together to help you in a justified shooting.
It seems like to me that this could get very costly if you get involved in one of these cases. If you were scared for your life, even if you were scared for your life and took the shot or even brandished, right, the firearm, they're coming after you. And you're going to have to get a lawyer, and you're going to have to spend a lot of money to save your freedom.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's not just criminal either. You see a lot on these justified shootings where people come off and they go, nope, it was justified. You're not going to jail. You're cleared. What immediately happens is the family of the person that was the criminal in this case, right? They immediately come out and go, oh, they were a great kid. They would never do that. And then they sue you civilly for damage to their family, for taking them out of their lives. And it's like, and now you still have to go through the whole process. And there are people that are winning, coming off clean criminally, and then losing in civil court, which is also very counterintuitive, right? That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's a real thing. You can look it up. There's plenty of cases of that stuff happening. And it's not good.
Best way then to protect yourself as far as post, if something were to happen, you mentioned insurance. There's insurance you can buy that will...
There are various companies that are doing basically concealed carry insurance. There's a bunch of them out there. But like USCCA has their own. I know like US Law Shield has some. There's a ton out there. But they are geared specifically for doing legal services for people in justified shootings.
Right.
Obviously they go in, like, you try to commit armed robbery and then you get,
that doesn't,
they're not going to help you much, but but for actual criminally justified shootings, yes, they are there, and they will, I mean, millions of dollars worth of legal fees, they'll sit there and cover for you and supply lawyers, so you know you're getting people that know what they're talking about with this stuff.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool, pretty useful.
Wanted to ask you, we're going to revisit early in the show. You weren't here yet, but we were talking about, what, remember Blue's Clues, that kid's show? You can do anything that you want to do, right?
Yeah.
Well, I contend, and my wife wants me to learn how to paint with her. I'm not an artist. I don't draw. I'm terrible at art, at drawing. We have
pictures of my drawings in terms of a jest. Yes. Because of how bad they are. Yes.
So I would ask you, when someone says you can do anything that you want to do, what is your feeling?
I think that's true within reason.
Within reason,
right?
Okay.
So if somebody, I don't know, I mean, you tell me I'm going to go be the greatest NBA player of all time, even if this was 10 years ago.
I don't think so.
Good one. It's a good joke.
Bud Webb was
good. I mean, yeah, if I started really early and that was my passion, and I worked my tail off, I potentially could have gotten there. You know, I am athletic in general. However, there are people that are not athletic. They're probably not going to make it. right? You might be decent at basketball, right? You can go have fun and
go play college.
May even played in college potentially, but yeah, it's. I don't know. The concept of you can do anything, I think, has been overblown and conflated with if you think it'll happen, then it will. And I think that's also part of the problem with my generation. is I want it to be so it should be, is kind of what that's become. And that's a bit of a fallacy.
You're right about that. Dave Romer. Dave, we've run out of time. And
no problem.
I did have one quick story on that in the last 30 seconds. Years ago, I was covering college basketball, and I had a coach come to me, and he said, man, if I could put that kid's heart in that kid's body, we would have an NBA player. But the problem is the guy with the talent doesn't have the heart. The guy with the heart doesn't have the talent. And it's realistic, man. That's what it's all about.
For sure.
Dave Romer. Thank you, Dave. Great to talk to you today.
No, thanks for having me on. It's fun.
Back tomorrow with Mayor Billings. Thanks for listening, everybody.